Ladies and gentlemen of the Open Drama UK Company, this is your half-hour call. Open Drama UK is proud to present a monthly podcast related to theatre and drama education by people in the know. Put your headphones on, grab a cup of tea, and get ready.
Welcome to Open Drama UK's Half Hour Call podcast. And this month, we're joined by Kate Miller and Gemma Woofenden. Kate and Gemma are both qualified drama teachers who I know personally very well. Gemma is the co-champion for West Yorkshire here at Open Drama UK. And Kate was my very own subject mentor back in 2008 when I trained to teach. So you have both had incredibly varied and wonderful careers to date. So I'd love to hand over to you both and for you to explain how you both started your careers and where you find yourselves now. Kate, would you like to go first?
I would love to, Holly. Thank you very much for that lovely introduction. Gosh, it feels like I've been teaching forever. So where I started, I can't even remember. And I definitely ended up not where I was planning. So as you say, it becomes very varied and very up and down, and often in teaching takes you down pathways you're not expecting to go, definitely. So I started very similar, Joe and I started in similar place, the same place. So we started both on a drama and education course in Bretton Hall, which was a very cool place to study. And then I went away and did a bit of work in London and then came back and did a PGCE back up in Leeds, in Wakefield, along still with Gemma at that point, which was great. And then I didn't know where I was going to go. I applied for jobs in Leeds and in London, fell into a job in London where I was the only drama teacher and it was a new school. So I was the head of drama as well, which was very daunting as an NQT, because you're kind of like, the freedom of just being able to make up the whole curriculum, and then equally the terrifying nature of like, am I actually teaching these children what they need to know, which was quite scary. But had a few years there, which was brilliant, and worked my way and kind of built the department, and as the school grew, I grew, which was fabulous. Then I took a year out and did some teaching in Australia, just as supply teaching, but every time I went into a supply school, I sought out the drama teacher and did a bit of drama stuff as well, because I loved it so much. And that was really cool to see how drama was being taught across different schools in Australia, which was cool. Came back and then got a job at a performing arts school in London. So I'd previously worked in a school in kind of Beckton, and it was definitely very much about behaviour, supporting behaviour more than teaching drama. So that was, I'm going to leave that, I need to go somewhere where we are teaching drama. So performing art school is what I was looking for. And again, have a kind of baptism of fire of a very different world of teaching, and really felt I got my hands into drama teaching by then, but by now I'd been teaching for kind of 5-6 years, so it was really good to do that. I was there for a few years, then went and had a baby for a bit, came back and felt like I couldn't do the drama and be a mum at the same time, just because of the extracurricular stuff and the demand from drama that way. So actually moved into special needs, which again, never thought I would do. I retrained to be a specialist supporting children with dyslexia and being able to assess them, and worked alongside a couple of speech therapists, and we created the communication centre at school that I was, the performing arts school that I'd been working in. And then that school that I was in decided to open a free school for children with speech, language and communication needs. And I was like, that sounds cool. I'll come and be the drama teacher there. So kind of did a summer school and was meant to just be kind of coming an hour a week to do some drama, and fell in love with it, and kind of became more and more involved in what was happening in that school, more and more kind of upskilling, working with speech and language therapists, working with occupational health and OT and all sorts of amazing people, and developing the school from nothing, which was very, very exciting, very cool to do. And then I would say that I'm a little bit like Lady Macbeth, because I slowly killed off the male head teachers and I am now the head of school, which is brilliant. So it's like having my own drama department back when I first started, but now I'm in charge of running the whole school and designing what we're doing. So yeah, that's my kind of journey. If anyone said to me, you're going to be head of a special school, I don't know, even 4 or 5 years ago, I'd be like, no, what are you talking about? I'm a drama teacher. So yeah, definitely took some twists and bends along the way. That's where I am now.
What a variety, and what a route to get there. That's amazing.
Absolutely. I've learned over the years that a lot of the things that I was using in drama are the skills that you use to support children with specific learning difficulties and kind of developmental language difficulties. So the visuals, the modelling, all the sort of things that we do very naturally as drama teachers actually work really well with the kids in my school.
And Gemma, would you like to talk us through your career and how it's kind of varied and where you've ended up now and what you do?
Oh, thank you. It's so nice to be together with both of you. It feels like a real special thing for us to be able to come together and talk about our work. So as Kate said, we both studied a BA in arts and education with drama at Breton. Both did the degree at the same time, and Kate went off for a bit and I continued after my degree to train as a drama teacher, still at Breton, PGCE drama, and have a really fond memory of my time at Breton. Breton was a place that really supported me through some difficult times in my life, and I applied for a couple of courses at Breton, and in reflection I think there was a part of me that always wanted to work in theatre but didn't think it was financially viable, and it felt like learning how to facilitate workshops would mean that I had a skill and I would definitely get work, and I think I probably didn't feel like I was robust enough to go for auditions. And I think at the time, directing wasn't something that there were many courses in doing. And I don't feel like at that point, schools or colleges really had a sense of how you get a job in theatre. But I didn't know that then. So yeah, trained as a drama teacher and then went to Brigshaw High School as a newly qualified drama teacher. I had loads of interviews. Everyone on my course was getting jobs and I wasn't. And my tutor kept saying, the right school will come along for you. And I was like, don't be ridiculous. All schools are the same. Well, I didn't know, did I? But actually it's true. The right school does come for you. And the school that I got my first teaching job in was a school that didn't have any drama in Key Stage 3. So they needed someone to contribute, very similar to Kate, someone to contribute to building up that provision. So I ended up staying at that school for 10 years, started as a newly qualified teacher and did a lot of the things that I think other drama teachers do, went for a head of year job, became head of drama and then became team leader for creative arts, directed school shows, ran drama clubs, was heavily involved in the teaching and learning work that we did, was really interested in assessment for learning. Because I think one of the skills that you need in a drama space is the young people to be able to be independent. And I think a lot of the teaching and learning stuff that I was involved with was like, how do we get young people to lead on their learning? And also, how do we get young people to understand about their learning? I remember doing metacognitive plenaries. I loved all that stuff. Anyway, so then after 10 years of teaching, I think I probably had burnt out and needed to do something else. And first of all, thought I'm going to go off and travel. And then I thought, that's not really you, Gemma. That's just what you hear other people doing. So decided to go and do an MA in Manchester in applied theatre. What had led me to do the MA is that I'd done a course with Central, a directing text course with Central that they used to offer if you did NT Connections. So I picked up a couple of credits and I thought, oh, I know, I'll turn this into an MA. And actually, I just left those credits and did the full MA. During my time doing my master's, I had lots of opportunities to connect with different organisations. And I think what I learned from doing the MA in applied theatre is the vastness of the opportunity of drama in different contexts. So I worked as a creative evaluator on a project with young carers. So the Lowry Theatre does a lot of work with young carers, they still do. And I went to observe a project, drama project, and offered creative evaluation. And that, I didn't even know that was a thing I could do, but I trained drama teachers. I'd observed lessons, but I learned a lot. I learned a lot about drama in different contexts. And one of the biggest learning curves for me, leaving teaching after 10 years and working in drama in different contexts, is managing the discipline and the expectations, and yeah, that was a big learning curve. So I did my year of my MA learnt loads, met loads of people, and then found out about this like freelance life, a different way of doing drama. And I just thought, I don't think I can go back to teaching in a school for lots of reasons. So then a job came up at Leeds Playhouse for youth theatre director. And the Leeds Playhouse, I live in Leeds currently. I was moved up from down south to go to Breton, stayed. And I thought, youth theatre director at Leeds Playhouse? Oh my God, I'd love to go there. And always thought, you know, Leeds Playhouse, amazing. And applied for the job and got the job and couldn't believe I got the job, and spent the first year just sweating and feeling like an imposter and feeling like I didn't know what I was doing. And it's interesting because the drama department that I worked in at the school, we were really successful GCSE results, A-level results. Drama's like the cool thing in a school. You know, we're lucky because we make something that's got this performance outcome. And then you go to work in a big regional theatre, everyone's doing drama. Everyone's making theatre. And it's quite intimidating, but absolutely brilliant. So I've been the youth theatre director at Leeds Playhouse for 10 years. And that was a new thing, which I was appointed to build the youth theatre. And I've learnt loads. And we commission new writing. And I've been in a tech and a professional space. And I've met amazing directors and choreographers and designers. And I absolutely love the world of theatre. And I'm completely immersed in all the excitement of it. And then the pandemic meant that I was furloughed. And that was when I realised how much the title of youth theatre director was a massive thing for my identity. And working in a theatre felt like a seal of approval. And yeah, it was a hard time, but it opened up lots of opportunities. I've reduced my hours at Leeds Playhouse. I do 3 days a week at Leeds Playhouse as the youth theatre director. And now I do 2 days a week with Opera North. Opera, a whole new other world. And I'm their drama coach. So supporting their youth choruses to develop their stagecraft and their performance skills. And I do lots of other work, consulting with drama teachers, teaching, directing. It's crazy. So that's me.
So when Gemma told me about the job at Opera North, I was like, so it's great we did that one module on opera when we were at university together. I was like, this will set you up for this perfectly.
We did.
It didn't really set you up though, did it? We had to write an opera.
I think that is fascinating going into another big arts organisation. It's really, the fact it's opera means that I can just always come from the default position of like, I don't know what that is. And it's really freed me up. It's freed me up to recognize it's all right not to know things. And if you get to 44 and you're willing to say, I don't know the answer, I think that's a pretty brave move, really. Although I sometimes pretend I do know.
As head of school, I always pretend I know.
Yeah.
That's why we're so good at acting, you see, holding life.
Oh, I don't really know how to follow up after those two career paths. They're just incredible. And they're so varied, and they're just so rich, and they're so helpful for listeners to listen to, because there'll be so many people coming out the back end of this pandemic and thinking, I can't keep teaching, I can't keep doing this, but this is all I know. Or people thinking, right, I've been doing this job for a while, I need to try and think about doing something else, but I don't think I can do anything else. And you two both went to Breton Hall. You both then obviously went off and started off as teachers and did different things. When were you at Breton Hall? When were you NQTs?
I said to Gemma today, she's going to ask us dates. And I was like, both of us are rubbish at dates. I was like, Holly will know. She's great at dates.
I feel like it was in 1999. I feel like that's maybe when I was there or when I was graduated. So I've been 10 years at Leeds Playhouse, or nine, and then 10 years as a teacher. Yeah. So,
and Jamiroquai was big. Jamiroquai was playing a lot. So.
I think we're both dyslexic. So it's a hard, I don't know. What is 20 years away from what the date is now? What even year are we in?
Millennium, 2000, 2001.
Yeah.
I won't tell you what I was doing.
No.
So when you trained to teach in 2000, 2001, what sort of networking and subject support was there then compared to what we've got now? Gemma, nodding ferociously.
Yeah. So when I started as a newly qualified drama teacher, my school must have had quite a bit of money because I could kind of go and do anything. And I remember the National Theatre ran lots of courses, like one day courses on certain theatre styles. And it felt like there was money and it felt like I could go off and do lots of different things. And I don't know how much networking, but it definitely felt like there was a commitment to developing people's CPD. So that is something I can remember. I think now with technology and social media, it's way more easy to connect with other creatives and other teachers. I think there's lots of ways in, and I think lots of theatres offer CPD opportunities for teachers, and that, you know, creates networking opportunities as well. I think I was a part of a consortium for like drama GCSE, and I think we supported each other a lot with marking and that kind of thing. But I think it's hard. I think during the pandemic, a lot of us came together and sort of supported each other, and people were being really encouraged to partner up with people, because I think it was quite an isolating time. And I do think networking and partnership is a really, collaborating is a really great way to work, because you just maximize all the great things about both the organizations, three organizations, whatever, and you can learn from each other. But I think it's really challenging, because I think you've got your own agenda and you've got your head down and you're getting on with things. And teachers are very busy. And a lot of the time it feels like, and this could be wrong, and it'd be interesting to hear Kate's opinion of it as a head teacher, I think it's hard for teachers to get out of school. And it means that a lot of networking opportunities would happen out of school hours. And I feel like it's a big ask at the end of a school day for a teacher to attend something that's out of their hours. And again, I think working at Leeds Playhouse, Amy Lancelot leads on the education work, trying to make it easy for schools to come to see shows. So, you know, anything that means you've got to get young people out of school or teachers out of school is going to be hard. So finding creative ways to join up and maximize how that happens within different organizations is the key. And I think some of the new technology we've got helps us to do that. But there is nothing better than face-to-face, getting people in a room.
Yeah. It's interesting that you just said about the out of hours. I've had other careers before teaching myself, and I've stepped out of teaching and done other things. Any training or anything I went on, they happened in working hours. You know, there was not the expectation that I would go to something in the evening, unless I wanted to, of course, or that I'd give up my Saturday to go to an event all day. But yeah, as teachers, it's very much like give, which is seems to be sadly becoming the given and not so much being pushed back against that. And I presume, and Kate probably pick up on this, a lot of that is financial, because schools, the cover cost and implication for you to go out. And then also for some schools, they don't want staff out because they want that same person in front of the young people every day to have that consistency to help with the behaviour and the culture of the school.
I had a quick chat with Gemma before this to go, right, CPD, what should I do? And I don't remember there being loads of networking, like Gemma said, but now you've said about there being training, I remember in my first year going to Perth as part of, like, in Australia, as part of some training. I know there was this really weird, like, getting teachers out there to see what's happening in different places. And you could just put together a project and then it got funded. And I didn't actually even put the project together. Another teacher did, an art teacher and a PE teacher put this project together to go and explore art and PE in Perth. Which got approved, and then the art teacher fell pregnant, so I went instead. And it's my first year as a teacher. I was like, so I'm going to go to Perth. Okay. And then I didn't even have to do anything. Like, I didn't have to write it up. I didn't have to do anything. I think after that, they put in a few more kind of constraints about what to do. Different government being in charge. So like you say, they felt like there was more money invested in teaching and education.
I went to Jamaica with the British Council. I remember now. This is the thing. There was lots of, it felt like there was more money.
There definitely was more money. And even when I retrained as a specialist dyslexia teacher, that was a funded course as well. So there was more money around, so you could do your training. I think networking wise is better now. I think when I first started, I told you guys that it was a new school and I was the only drama teacher, and I had to do a lot of seeking. I had to try and find and kind of build up the drama teacher network. So I remember kind of assigning myself a mentor. I found a great drama teacher in a school not that far away and kind of met up with her, Shannon, I think her name was, and did lots of work with her, but kind of created that myself and tried to build up these networks. I one of the things I love about special is I can be a little bit more flexible for my staff. So we've had staff training and there is more stuff online. So the London Grid for Learning, LGFL, do a lot of free training. And some of that is after school, but a lot of it is during the mornings. And with Zoom and things like that, that does mean I can get, you know, I had some staff off this week that both went to a trauma-informed practice training. They did the morning, we covered it in-house, and they've done that training, you know. So we have, it has been good to be able to be a bit more flexible with that. And in special, I can, and because I'm the head, so I'm allowed to, I can kind of go, oh, there's a great performance happening. We would all just go and see that. That's what we're doing this afternoon. And I can kind of reshift and change the timetable. In mainstream, that is a lot harder, definitely. And there are definite budget constraints. There is less money around, definitely, which makes it harder. But networking, so I feel there's less money for training, but networking has increased. And I think that is because of the pandemic partly, and because I know I'm on a lot more boards and a lot more panels because I can do it this way. I can do it in Zoom. So I haven't got to do that journey. It doesn't mean I'm out for the whole morning. And if there is suddenly a disaster, I'm still in the school building. So someone can get my attention for 5 seconds if they need to. So I think that has helped in a way. But as Gemma says, though, it's not the same as the face-to-face stuff. But it does mean I can get to more things, which has been useful.
Gemma, do you miss school teaching?
Interesting question. I don't know. I recently did some work with Theatre Centre, and they were doing some action research on COVID recovery for teachers, for young people, and also Theatre Centre were looking at how they develop their work so they can be more sustainable, because they tour work into schools, really high standard professional work into schools. And part of the work that I was doing with them was consultation with teachers, and it was like CPD, but also research. And I really enjoyed working with those teachers, and I enjoyed listening to the stories and hearing the type of stuff that they were doing in their classroom. But no, I don't think I do. I think some of the things about education nowadays doesn't sit comfortably with my own personal beliefs around supporting young people. I think the pressures that are on teachers and councils, like it feels like there's a lot of pressure in school. A lot of stuff is focused on achievement. Often the ways of managing things, it's like reward or punishment. I used to believe in order to get young people to do certain things, it'd be like, well, like this whole sort of thing about like fear-based ways of working with people. And I just, yeah, it doesn't sit comfortably with how I want to be in my life anymore. I when I saw the job at Leeds Playhouse, it was a lot less money than I was on as a team leader, but I didn't have the money that I earned as a teacher was often spent at the weekends on buying new clothes, going out for dinner, because I felt like I deserved that, because I was working myself into the ground, and the you know, the extremeness of schools, the all or nothing, the really long hours, and everyone just works till we're going to get holiday, we're going to get holiday. And that is, I need more balance in my life. So unfortunately, and I know not all schools are like that, and I think teachers do brilliant jobs, but I gave it my all, and yeah, it's not for me. But you know, all places are frustrating to work. All places are hard. It's not by any means simple working in a theatre or working with young people after school hours. I work a lot of evenings, and it's a, you know, it's a very different lifestyle to teaching. That's a long answer. I don't want to be negative about schools. I had a brilliant time. I learned so much. And maybe I'm just older now and I need a different pace of life, I think.
But also a lot of people miss, often say they miss teaching because they miss the young people, whereas you're still with young people. So you've got the best of both worlds. You're seeing young people who are engaging in drama, choosing to engage in drama, enjoying it, and you haven't got the bureaucracy of the school environment. So you've got a nice balance. What about you, Kate? You've moved up into leadership. You might not be in the classroom as often. Do you miss teaching?
I do. Yeah, there are definitely days I do. And then I remember trying to direct Wind of the Willows or The Crucible. And I'm like, no, I'm okay, actually. I'm all right again. So yeah, it does vary day by day. I still teach. I still teach three lessons a week, which I know is nothing, but I only have three classes that do drama. And obviously I'm teaching at a very different level from what I was doing at my previous school. But I love it. I love getting in the classroom. I love teaching it. I love working with young people. And I would hate not to be able to do that. There are definitely days as a head of school where I'm like, oh God, all I had to worry about was my reports and directing that GCSE piece. That would be great. But you know, I know I have said to a few people, I think I even said to Gemma this morning, when I was a classroom teacher, I remember being very, very tired, super tired, and needing those holidays. And as a head, I am tired this week, but generally I feel I've got a bit more space to be and a bit more space to think. Because it isn't on the ground, that working hours that teachers do. And I always try and remember that as a head of school to ensure my staff do get their breaks and do get time where they can kind of recharge. So yeah, moments, but maybe it's that kind of dreamlike sequence of what it used to be like. And if I actually had to go and do it, I probably would find it really hard work.
The energy that's required to teach or to direct or to deliver a workshop, that is where you give your whole self. And I think being in front of young people, there's an element of performance and you have to switch it on and you have to be very patient and you have to be open and you have to be interesting. And I think you have to be charismatic. You know, you're in a leadership position where you have to get the people in the room, whether it's adults or young people, you have to get them on board. You have to get them wanting to explore, to play, to make whatever it is you're doing. And that requires a certain level of yourself. And I have been thinking more recently, how can I still lead a room, run a room, run a workshop and not give everything? And I don't know the answer to that, because when you are leading, you feel like you have the full responsibility for the pace, for the outcome, for people's enjoyment. And I think that is what's hard. I think that's the part of the job that makes us exhausted, because you are managing so many different personalities, so many different needs. And as we all know, drama is very active and there's lots of stuff going on around the room. So I think that's the thing that makes it hard, but that's the thing that makes it exciting. I remember being a newly qualified drama teacher and saying to a class, good morning, and asking them to listen. And everyone was quiet and everyone looked at me and I was like, what is happening? And actually, as somebody who is, you know, who enjoys an audience, you get a lot of audience, you know. And when I used to do teacher and role, I was asking for a round of applause. So it feels like that is the thing that is exciting about delivering. but also exhausting. And maybe everything I've just said there makes me look like I've got a massive ego, which I think I have. But yeah, the performance of it, I think, is the tiring bit. And then also on top of that, you know, if you have parents' evenings, again, speaking to parents, managing their expectations. For me, I was always like, oh, I've got to do the best job ever.
And a lot of teachers feel like that, because I think going into teaching, yes, it's a career, but it is, and it sounds a bit, because people say it, but it is a vocation. You know, you're doing it for the love of your subject, maybe at secondary level, or for the love of those young people. And it is very emotionally draining. And I think
especially with drama, because drama isn't a national curriculum subject, you are having to, it feels like you have to constantly argue or sell your subject. And it's the same if you're creating projects, arts, theatre, applied work with marginalised people, with young people. You're always having to advocate, especially with youth theatre, you're having to advocate like why you need a space, why you need more money to make the work. And it, you know, unless, you know, unless you've got that passion and drive, it's really hard. But I feel like there's a culture that says, well, there's a culture that says you have to love it, you have to be passionate about it, because you'll have to, you know, it feels like we have to fight. When I started my job at Leeds Playhouse, I was asked to write an article for the stage about why drama is important. And I sort of thought, well, I can't believe I'm doing this, because this is what we did when we were training to be drama teachers. We had to write about process or product, which was the thing that was important. And whether it's, you know, theatre and education, drama and education, teacher role, or do you use text or do you devise? And the conversations I was having with young people, with the teachers recently, is how do we market our subject? How do we get senior leaders to believe in the importance of drama? And a part of me is like, I don't want to have to keep justifying the thing that I love. And that takes a certain type of person. And it's very frustrating. Sorry, Kate, you were going to say something.
No, I was just going to say, when you said about how do we get senior leaders, you just make them all the head teachers. Drama teachers make the best head teachers. So that's all you need to do. Promote all of your drama teachers to become heads, and then it will all be okay.
And actually, the artistic director at Leeds Playhouse, James Brining, his journey through theatre was that he was a youth theatre director. So, you know, the lived experiences of leaders or people in positions of power, they're important. And, you know, that's why representation and diversity and all those things, and young people being able to see themselves in those jobs, and the people in those jobs being able to understand the people that they're working. I mean, it's just, yeah, that's for another podcast right there, Holly.
It certainly is. I've just finished my first full term as an assistant head with a kind of 50% timetable. And I'm just listening to both of you. I'm forgetting I'm actually part of this conversation. I'm sat here like I'm a listener and I'm nodding along. I'm like, it's so true. And I think the word that was coming to my head, Gemma, when you talk, it's just draining. It can become so draining because you're so emotionally involved. And I often sit with young people, particularly my sick formers, and I think, I have to do this for you. I've got to get this for you because somebody did this for me when I was in your position. And let's forget about the data run that I need to analyze, and let's just think about that later. And of course, it's, you know, later is 8-9 o'clock at night once I put my own children to bed. And that is hard because the balance of leadership and teaching is, oh yeah, that's another podcast. But we're going to run out of time. And the theme for November is all about early career teachers, or ECTs, or as they were known back in the day when we were all whippersnappers, NQTs. So if you could go back to whichever year that is that we haven't quite confirmed, but let's go with 2000. If you could go back there and give your NQT drama teaching self some top tips or some guidance, what would you say?
I think I'd say to a newly qualified drama teacher, you are enough. You've got this job. You are the right person for the job. And whatever you do will be enough. I remember at the end of the day, often feeling like what I'd done is never enough. The job doesn't have a full stop. Things will keep happening. Young people will keep, this is the thing, young people keep moving, keep talking, keep behaving. So it's never, you're never going to draw a line under the day. So just trust that what you've done is enough and try and rest. And if I knew about meditation, I might have meditated back then. You know, we talk about self-care and yeah, like work out what it is that you need to be able to relax, trust that you've done enough, and where possible, keep your subject knowledge like fresh. Go and see shows, read plays, connect with your local theatre, and find some good people that can, you know, share resources with you.
Yeah, I think that last one, Gemma, about find some good people, find your tribe, find, there will be people around that you can work with and support each other. And I think I probably was very, when I was an NQT, I was definitely very busy to get through that, to get that year done, to get it over and done with. And like, okay, so I'm not the newbie anymore. And I think it's important to take time and to know that you know, you do your PGCE or however you've got into teaching, and then it's another massive learning curve. It's not, you know, you are still learning and that's okay. Like Gemma says, it's almost like give yourself permission. You are still learning. You're still developing your skills, but enjoy that. You know, you've got the energy usually.
What I was a bit embarrassed about myself is as a teacher, I'm all about like encouraging young people to learn and it's okay to make mistakes. But when I'm learning something new, none of that applies. So I'm like, inherently I am about lifelong learning, and everything I say to young people I need to say to myself, like, yeah, is a long journey of learning. So can we show ourselves the same patience and encouragement that we show young people? That's what we've got to do,
definitely. And to know that it's a marathon, not a sprint. You know, I didn't have to get it all done in that first year, and I'm still here, still teaching. So if you've gone into teaching, it's very possible you're going to be doing it, like myself and Gemma, 20, 30 years after you were an NQT or an ECT. So you've got time. And I think the best thing about getting into teaching is there are so, like we've started this podcast, there are so many different pathways that you could then go down as well. So whatever area you become interested in, you can kind of extend and go into that. So yeah, lots of what Gemma's saying in terms of take time for yourself, look after yourself, know you're not going to get it all done now in 2 years, which I think is great. I think it's good that you've got a longer time as an ECT. I think that's good, because the 1 year you're still learning so much. There's a lot still to do. I remember my biggest stress being, what do I do if a child picks a chair up to throw at me? You know, that was my biggest fear. So every new teacher out there, don't worry about that. There's worse stuff. No, it's fine. That may happen, but it will be okay. So to know it will be okay as well.
Did a student ever throw a chair at you?
I mean, several. I've had several chairs thrown at me, but that's okay. I know how to duck. It's all right.
I was called.
And are you allowed to say this word? I'm
not going to swear. A fat, a C word.
Yeah.
And I said, you called me a fat cow. And he said, no, I didn't. I went, you did. I heard it. And he went, no, I called you. And then he said the other thing. And I went bright red. And I was like, and then I had to walk them down the corridor to like go and find a senior leader. And you know when like the child's walking behind you and you feel self-conscious. Yeah. And I'm like, this is a year seven and I'm a grown up. Why am I so stressed?
Yeah. Knowing that, I think I used to say that to Holly when I trained her, you know, that thing of, remember you are the adult in the room. It's okay. Remind yourself that you are the adult and they are too, and you can do this. I think that self-talk is really important. And I remember people saying to me, don't take it personally. And I came back into my drama studio one day and on my whiteboard, it was like, Miss Miller, you are a effing something. I was like, I feel like that's quite personal. I think that's like a personal attack. Can I take this one personally? You know, but don't take stuff personally. They are children. All behavior tells you something. But yeah, it's interesting.
That's one of the best things you ever said to me, Kate, was behavior is communication.
100%. What are they trying to tell you? What is it? It all comes from somewhere. Yeah, it really, really does. And that's really important to hold on to. And I think as drama teachers, we get to know the kids really, like we work so close. It's a different dynamic, a different relationship compared to maybe the maths teacher or the science teacher, that you just the world that we're in with them and the work we do with them, you do get to see a rawer side. So you might see some of those behaviours because they feel safe and trust you. So that kind of be with that as well.
Yeah, I've had a lot of colleagues say, because you're a drama teacher, are you not going to go down the pastoral route? Are you not going to be a head of year? Are you not? And I've always resisted that. So I lead on early career teachers and ITTs. And I've kind of very consciously gone down that academic management route because I feel like I see them so pastorally within my timetable that I want to look at that different aspect so that you can, you know, have those different skills to bring to both aspects of the role. Well, thank you both so much for joining us this month and for giving us your insights and for showing us kind of where you've gone and what you've got up to and how successful you've both been. This has been a very girl power episode as well, hasn't it? So thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Holly.
Thank you for listening. Make sure you subscribe so you don't forget to join us next month for more content, conversations and CPD. In the meantime, have a look at our website. Follow, like and tag us on all social media platforms. Until next month,